Henry Lee Lucas once said, "My victims never knew what was going to happen to them. I've had shootings, knifings, strangulations, beatings, and participated in actual crucifixions of humans all across the country. There's people just like me who set out to destroy life." Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode on Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder. It's Barb here. What's up, Shay?
Nothing much. Just trying to get the house ready for the housewarming party and working a lot. I finally slept in today till like 11 because we've just been going at work. How are you?
Yes, I know. When you said you're going in yesterday, I was like, what? On a Saturday? That, I've never heard you doing that. But it's good because you get a lot of overtime, and I'm excited for your housewarming party coming up here in the next few weeks. I am doing really good. I had a pretty laid back week and weekend, I guess, had some me time and got to enjoy just going to Barnes and Noble and browsing through books and stuff like that. But other than that, I can't really say much else that's been going on. And I'd like to thank you to everyone who shared our merch on social media and messaged us about wanting some t-shirts or stickers. We appreciate all of you. We have some cool options for the summer, which I'm sure you guys have seen, but if you haven't, they consist of a tie-dye blue shirt with a skeleton on the back chilling at the beach, as well as a soft pink one with a summer picture on the back of the t-shirt. They're super cute, and I know summer's almost over, but I thought it was pretty cool to put that skeleton in there, or we thought it was cool kind of to lead into the fall. This episode, we are covering a lot of different things as well, and much like last episode, I'm going to tell you listeners, you will have to pay close attention to everything I'm getting ready to tell you. I got most of my information from Wikipedia, as well as allthatsinteresting.com and the Netflix series, The Confession Killer. So if you couldn't really tell by the title of today's episode, today we are going to tag along with the Otis Toole case I covered 2 weeks ago. And we spoke about Henry Lee Lucas pretty briefly, but I didn't get to dive into his story. And today we are picking up where we kind of left off and uncovering parts of his story right now. So, are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready for this.
All right, me too. Let's begin with Henry as a child. Henry was born August 23rd, 1936, in a one-room cabin in Blacksburg, Virginia. He had a very rough childhood, very similar to Otis Toole. His mother would make him dress as a girl in public and abuse him often growing up. His mother, Viola, would bring home men and prostitute herself out in order to make money. There were actually many times where she'd make Henry sit and watch her do these things with these men. He would end up losing an eye at age 10 after becoming infected, and this all happened following a really bad fight he had with his brother. A lot of his friends and classmates would explain that Henry displayed very strange behavior, and some of it was quite frightening to a lot of the classmates. And then later in December 1949, when Henry was 13 years old, his alcoholic father died from hypothermia after going out and getting drunk and collapsing outside during a blizzard. This was what seemed like a turning point in Henry's life, because right after his father passed, he dropped out and he was in sixth grade and ran away from home. A few years later, in the year 1951, is when he claims to have committed his very first murder. This would have made him about 15 years old, and the victim that he claimed it was 17-year-old Laura Burnsley. He claimed to have strangled her after she refused sexual advances, and At this point, the police didn't know about it or detect anything. It wasn't until 3 years later when Henry was arrested on multiple counts of burglary in Richmond, Virginia. And this is kind of when everything started to unravel, and he was sentenced to 4 years in prison, but escaped and then was again captured 3 days later and then released 2 years later after that in 1959.
So he was taken to prison for burglary or for the murder?
No, he was arrested initially for the burglary. And then the police started to uncover what else he was doing that wasn't just the burglary.
I think it's crazy that the police were not like onto her case, knowing that she was 17 years old when she was missing.
So I think they were, but I don't think that they had been able to connect the dots that it was him, because this was still around like the 1950s and there wasn't DNA testing like there is now, so they just hadn't connected the dots yet.
Okay, I see.
So after being released, he decided to move to Michigan, where his sister Opal decided he could move in for her or with her for a while. I'm guessing until he could just get back on his feet. At this point in time, he was actually engaged to marry a pen pal he would write to while incarcerated. Later that year for Christmas, Henry's mother came into town to visit, and she did not approve of his fiance at all. When he told her that he was going to get married to this person, basically, no, worst mistake that he could ever do. She even insisted that he move back home to take care of her because she was getting pretty old and needed help. And as you could assume, this sparked a huge heated argument between these two people.
I'm going to say that she didn't approve because she's obsessed with him because of all the things that she was doing to him growing up. Like, she just didn't want another... I mean, I get they met in prison, but that doesn't necessarily, like... But then he's also a serial killer. So I guess, I don't know. Just still, I feel like she's got some weird obsession with him.
Yes, and I could agree with that, that there's some weirdest, like, obsession, and then also probably enhanced with the fact that if she was getting older and becoming very ill and needed help, it was like her way of doing both, having him back and just saying, it's because I'm sick, so I need you to come help me.
But yeah, like manipulating him.
Yeah, exactly. But he was not going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And for multiple days, they argued about what he should do, and it all came to a head when on January 11th, 1960, according to Henry, she hit him over the head with a broom. And this really made him angry, and in retaliation, he stabbed her in the neck. And he says after realizing what he had just done, and that his mother was what he thought initially to be laying lifeless on the floor in their home, he fled the scene. And this all happened at Opal's place. So Opal later returned home that day and discovered her mother lying in a pool of blood. And from what I could find, she was still alive, barely hanging on, and before the ambulance could make it to her house, she would sadly pass away. The official police report stated that she passed away from a heart attack from the stabbing that just unfolded. And the police pretty much knew who the killer was. Henry had an outstanding warrant and would be captured in Ohio when he was questioned with the murder of his mother. He claimed it was self-defense, saying that, you know, she hit him over the broom first and then he retaliated. However, the claim was rejected and he was given a 40-year imprisonment sentence for second-degree murder.
I just want to say that that's a big escalation from getting hit with their broom and stabbing someone. That's like 0 to 100.
Exactly, and that's why they would reject that, because they're saying there's no way that you killed her in self-defense. I mean, it was a broom.
Yeah, she wasn't like on top of him attacking him and all that. She smacked him in the head with the broom. He'd be all right.
Yeah, I know. And we don't even know if that's true because that's just what he's saying, you know? So you will not believe what would happen after only serving 10 years. So what is that? Like a quarter of his actual sentence. He was released from prison due to overpopulation.
Like the amount of times we see this, dude.
I know. I was literally about to say that. I'm like, every time we hear this, it's, well, of course, because we like cover murders and stuff, but it's like, why are you releasing people who are killers? I don't understand. Like, obviously, they're going to do it again.
I mean, so, and then they say overpopulation, but they're just going to get more people in there, and then it's going to get overpopulated again. Stop letting the murderers go.
Exactly.
And let the small, like, people who got caught with drugs on them, or
like petty small, theft.
Like, yeah, like petty theft, like things vandalism. That are not that intense. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
I know. It literally irks my being. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I don't even want to dive into that because I could go on to a whole spiel about that.
For real.
So, this would only make Henry about 35 years old and still very able to commit more crimes. And, of course, which he did. Not even a year later, Henry attempted to kidnap 3 school-age girls. He was arrested and given a 5-year sentence after that. During this particular time of incarceration, he would yet again get engaged to another person whom he decided to write to, and when he got out, they would marry in 1975. So I just want to say, like, not only did you kill your mother, but you killed your mom because she disagreed about you being engaged to somebody, and then you don't even marry him?
Yeah.
Like, what?
I guess he took her advice after all.
Yeah, seriously. So, after marrying this person in 1975, they would pretty much get separated, not even 2 years later, because the stepdaughter of his accused him of sexual abuse.
And which he probably did.
Yep, exactly. So, after this, he would drift around after the divorce, pretty much staying here, staying there, and then Otis Toole would pop up into his life. So, this is where they kind of connected and whatnot. They would become pretty close by now, and Henry would end up staying with Otis's parents for a while, and he would start to work on roofs and fixing neighbors' cars and selling scraps, pretty much doing what a drifter does and doing jobs here and there, trying to just make money and get by. And Otis had a niece. Her name was Becky Powell. She had a mild intellectual disability. And when Henry came into their lives, she recently escaped from a juvenile detention center. Her mother and grandmother would pass away, resulting that little Becky be put into a shelter in 1982 because nobody else was fit to take care of her. And at this point in time, Henry and Becky had a really close relationship, a romantic one, in fact. Henry has claimed many times that this 15-year-old girl, Becky, was his one true love, the one that loved him for him. Henry convinced Becky to run away with him, leaving the shelter behind, and they would travel across the United States together. They would end up in California and would claim to be married, and this was what they were using to get jobs. They would end up meeting a family that was involving a woman named Kate Rich, and they would hire Becky and Henry to help her out around the, I guess, around the house, or like to be like an assistant, I guess, if you would. But they would end up firing them because they weren't completing their jobs that they were given, and they would started to write their checks, like checks to themselves under Rich's account, and basically was stealing money out of the account.
I'm just so shocked. I just like, can't believe.
I know. I just literally, whenever I was researching this, I was mind blown by how many events happened in Henry's life, and he wasn't even 40 yet. Like, How do you manage to do all these things and travel here, travel there, kill this person, you know, get a job, make a 15-year-old, like, become your one true love? You were engaged, you were married. Like, I don't understand all this. It's just so much. You know what I mean?
Man, I barely have time to do an episode with just having a job and school.
I know.
Let alone all that stuff. That's a lot.
I know. That's what I thought. So, from what I could find, after being turned away from the riches and fired, they would decide to hitchhike all the way out to Texas. And this is when Henry found a roofing job. Now, at this point in their lives, Becky became very argumentative and very homesick for Jacksonville, Florida, because she has been traveling with Henry across the United States, and she just really wanted to go back home. And then one day, out of nowhere, she just disappeared at a truck stop. Well, later in June 1983, Henry was arrested for possession and would confess to the murders of his old employer, Rich, as well as his one true love, Becky. He even led the police to their burial sites. Now, I just want to say, it takes a special someone. Like, I wonder if Becky knew that at this point, I don't even know. Like, I feel like Becky had to know that he was going to end up murdering her.
He said that she accepted him for him, so she had to know more than what a lot of other people knew. And it's just weird that I feel like maybe because she kept saying, I want to go home, and he couldn't go home, maybe that was the reason why he went off. But I don't know. It's just weird that I understand why he probably killed the lady, but maybe she didn't know enough about him, and maybe he killed the lady in front of her and she started flipping out.
Yeah, that's very possible. Actually, I mean, being a 15-year-old girl, you can be manipulated into falling in love with somebody double, triple your age. But to sit there and witness something like that, that's where it could have drawn the line for her.
Yeah, like maybe he was all talk and didn't think that he would actually do it. And when he actually did it in front of her, that's when she's like, oh my God, this is for real.
Yeah, exactly. So even though we'll pick up where we just left off. Even though that he was able to bring the police to their burial sites, weird enough, the forensic evidence was inconclusive as to who these skeleton remains were. And the coroner stopped before identifying any of the remains. This is what led into Henry falsely confessing to dozens and dozens of murders. And in November 1983, he would go on to confess to roughly 28 unsolved murders. That's kind of where he started off. This led the Texas Division to establish the Lucas Task Force, which pertained solely to him. And many people believe the confessions Henry was telling. Like, how are you gonna, I don't know. To me, you are encouraging a sadistic, like, behavior, and to create a task force and call it the Lucas Task Force. Like, not, you just literally patted this man on the back and, like, lifted his ego.
Yeah, you gave him exactly what he wanted.
Exactly. During interviews, he would make up an entire story on who the victim was, how he found that victim, what they had been wearing during the murder, how he did it, and where he left their bodies. During these interviews with this task force, Henry was given cigarettes, often was left unhandcuffed. He was escorted to restaurants and cafes, and he was just given the treatment, a lot of people say. And for being a cold-blooded killer, this makes my blood boil. Before everything was over and done with Henry, he would end up clearing a total of 213 unsolved murder cases. But this wasn't actually true. Henry did not kill all of those victims. It would be uncovered that the members in the Lucas Task Force would give Henry these case files, pretty much. And they would say, here's their case, look at it, examine it, and then tell us what happened. So he was given details about the victims, what they were wearing, how he did it, where the body was found, and then they would turn around and say, okay, explain us what happened. Like, seriously? You pretty much just gave him the answers to the test and expected him to fail? Like, of course he was going to pass with flying colors. Like, you literally handed him all the information about the case.
That just, I have no words of how dumb that is. I just can't.
Yeah, like, it literally.
It's almost like they were baiting him. They were trying to get him to confess to all of these things so that way they could say, oh, job done, solved.
Exactly. Yep, and then they could go on, and I hate to say it because not every investigators are like this, but they could be like, we were the ones that uncovered and solved all these unsolved murders with Henry Lee Lucas, and that's not even the case.
Yeah.
But all it took was for one mess up. There were inconsistent details for two different cases he claimed to have been the killer behind. This was the murders of Michelle Bushka, whose body was found along Highway 90, as well as Caledonia Jane Doe, who was later identified as Tammy Alexander through DNA testing. And this is when investigators started to really question whether or not Henry was telling the complete truth about all of the murders he admitted to. It didn't take long for a journalist named Hugh Ainsworth and a few others to put together a timeline of events. Now, I don't know if this particular group was with the Lucas Task Force. I think this was a complete different group, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And these people would basically go up to a board and pinpoint where and when the murders took place and connected the dots. They were able to come up with that Henry Lee Lucas would have had to have driven his 13-year-old station Ford pickup truck 11,000 miles across the United States in the matter of 30 days to have committed the murders he claimed to have been behind. Which pretty much made everything false. They knew right then and there that he was going to become discredited and hardly anything could be trusted about what he was saying. Henry would end up being convicted at the end of it, a total of 11 murders, not 213. And on March 12th, 2001, Henry was found dead in his jail cell. He passed away due to congestive heart failure at the age of 64. And I just want to say he literally passed away pretty much the same reason why his mother did. And it all came from him stabbing her. And I just want to say that karma sucks.
It really do. It really do.
And
I hope it was really slow. Like, I hope it took a long time. And, like, he just laid there and just reminisced on all of the things that he did wrong and realizing where he's going.
Yeah, and I really just hope that all of the victims and his mother crossed his mind and he was like, the irony of how I was because of I'm evil, and I just feel, I don't even know if it's karma or fate or whatever it may be, but I really hope that it was slow as well. And he was buried at Captain Joe Beard Cemetery, and in the year 2012, people claimed that his grave was unmarked due to vandalism and theft.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, dang it. So
I just feel so bad. Oh,
I know. There are many different opinions about Henry Lee Lucas. Some believe that he isn't the most prolific serial killer in the United States, and some people believe that he is. There are people out there that believe Henry committed over 200 murders, including some police officers and investigators. He was a suspect in the number of about 3,000 different murders that I was able to find. And Henry initially did say he murdered at least 60. There is a lot of speculation as to what is true and what isn't behind these several cases, and I guess only he may know, and maybe over time, police will be able to truly, with DNA, connect him to the cases. I want to let you guys know that there is a Netflix documentary that has a few episodes that covers a lot of this and in better, greater detail than obviously I was able to give you guys. It is called The Confessions or something like that. I think it's The Confessions of The Confessions Killer of Henry Lee Lucas or something like that. I watched it when it came out. It was pretty interesting, and I recommend it if this case interests you and you want to learn some more about it. But that basically wraps up today's episode. What did you think, Shay?
I think you did a great job. Thanks for covering this. I think it's cool that you linked the two together, covering the first one and then covering the second one. It was pretty cool. Thank you for that.
Oh, yes, you're welcome. I was actually intrigued because before learning about Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole, I had never really realized that there's possible and probably multiple different serial killers out there that are friends.
And oh, yeah, there's like a whole like black market of serial killers that get together and they like plan these things out.
That's wild. Like, it makes me think it's more of like a freaking like satanic like cult or something like that.
Yeah.
But you never really put two and two together. Like, we always mainstream like the BTK and John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy, but we look at them and we think they're individuals, but a lot of times they probably know each other.
And the thing that blows my mind is like, how do you come up with that conversation? How do you just say, hey, I also enjoy killing people. How about we do this together?
I have no idea, but before they are even caught, it's like, how do you know they kill people? Because they haven't been caught yet from police.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know. I feel
that conversation has to go in there somehow. They have to somehow realize that they both enjoy killing people.
Yeah, and I'm curious as if, like, how those conversations went or, like, how they found out about each other, if it happens that way. But I want to thank everyone for stopping in to listen, and if you could please take a minute to give us a review or rating on whatever platform of choice that you are listening to us on to today, that would be great. We truly do appreciate it. And as always, stay out of dark places and watch your back, because you never know who's lurking. Bye.
Bye.